Good morning, Bethel. So today I'm going to be reading some scripture and some sacred text from a few different sources. And we don't usually read from other sacred texts, but in the spirit of seeing our connection with other people around the world, we will be reading from the Bhagavad Gita, the Quran, and the Bible. The Bhagavad Gita is an ancient sacred text, and it's an Indian text, over 5,000 years old, written in Sanskrit that became an important work of Hindu tradition in both terms of literature and philosophy. It means the song of the Lord. The Quran is the Islamic sacred book, believed to be the word of God as dictated to Muhammad by the archangel Gabriel and written down in Arabic. The Bible is the sacred text of Jews and Christians, of which we will be reading from the New Testament today. So the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 4, verses 5 through 6. My true being is unborn and changeless. I am the Lord who dwells in every creature. Through the power of my own appearance, I manifest myself in finite forms. From the Quran. And to Allah belongs the East and the West. So wherever you might turn, there is the face of Allah. Indeed, Allah is all-encompassing and knowing. And from the New Testament, John chapter 1, verses lines 1, 3, and 14. So here we go. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Through him all things came to be, and not one thing had its being but through him. And the Word became flesh and dwells among us. Amen.
So last Sunday, August 12th, 2018, at 10 a.m., I wasn't here with all of you, but while all of you were here, I died. I know, it may seem a little strange because I'm actually standing here in front of you, but I did attend a weekend workshop called The Universal Experience, and it's where I came face to face with the mystery of my own death. What I can tell you is it was the single most intense, life-changing workshop I've ever attended, and I've attended a lot. I'm still integrating a lot of what I learned, but what I can say is it changed me in ways I can't even begin to describe. Did I have a mystical experience? Perhaps. So how many of you have had a mystical experience? So a few of you. How many of you have no idea what I'm talking about? A few there. Some of you seem like, I don't know about this. So of those of you that have had a mystical experience, how would you define it? What is mysticism? I know. This is the interactive portion. You can shout something out if you have an idea. Direct experience of the divine. Being totally bathed in love. Say that again. Having a clear understanding of your purpose. Those are good. And those are great definitions. I went to Merriam-Webster really close. Mysticism is the belief that direct knowledge of God, spiritual truth, or ultimate reality can be attained through subjective experience such as intuition or insight. And when I first read that, I kind of went, blah, 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 what? That sounds good. It sounds like it encompasses everything, but I actually like what all of you said better. And for me, it is that experience of oneness, direct connection with God and with all of creation. So let's do a little review. We've been in this Earth Honoring Faith series, finding where we fit in creation, our responsibility in taking care of creation. We've been enjoying this beautiful garden that many of you have been adding to each week. I brought my gnome today. What garden's complete without a little gnome. Some of the items have made their way out onto our grounds. And we've also been learning about how we're part of an ecosystem where we're part of nature versus this ego system where we are ruling above nature, so that instead we're working in concert with nature. So our scriptures today, which may have seemed really strange, but I did pull the three scriptures from three religious traditions because I felt it was important to see how different religious traditions, that they all point to this oneness with God and God's presence and how God dwells in creation. I'm feeling a bit like Nikki this morning, so I'm going to, like, hold my notes. And no, that's okay. So, when I read scriptures like this from the various traditions, that's mystery to me. That's mysticism. And I wonder to myself, and I'm going to ask all of you, how would you live your lives differently if you fully understood the meaning of these sacred texts? Would anything be different? Yeah. Like what, that total understanding of oneness with God. So part of my experience this weekend was getting to hang out with this 500-year-old cedar. There's a picture of her. And at some point, we're guessing she got struck by lightning. And when I say I got to hang out in, I mean like inside. Like you could really crawl in. So there you can see the struck by lightning. And there's the inside. So I was literally surrounded by the charred trunk, cocooned in Grandmother Cedar. And pretty much every time I crossed the threshold and went inside, I would start crying. So I can share these experiences with you. I can share the pictures. But until each one of you have spent time in Grandmother Cedar, you don't know what gifts she has for you. That's really at the heart of mysticism. You can read experiences. I can even talk to you and kind of bring you to a threshold, but it's you that has to have the actual experience. So sometimes experiences will be like really sudden, like boom, you have this experience of feeling your skin melt away, you know you're one with God and with everyone and everything. And sometimes it's a lot more subtle. It's like a whisper that if you're not careful, you're going to miss. I love what Thich Nhat Hanh says, that when we look deeply into a flower, we see the elements that come together to allow it to manifest. We see clouds manifesting as rain, and when I touch the flower, I'm touching the cloud and touching the rain. This is not just poetry, it's reality. If we take the cloud and the rain out of the flower will not be there. The flower cannot be as a separate entity. It has to interbe with the light, with the clouds, with the rain. Okay, I'm going to let you take a moment for that one to sink in, because that was a lot. So, when I hold this flower, when I look at this flower, I'm actually touching the clouds and the rain and the earth and the sun that all went in to bring this, to create this flower. So what if I slow down a little bit more and I actually take the time to look at it? To actually look at the outline of the petals. To maybe smell it. To admire it, to feel the softness of the petals, giving it my full attention, then I'm connecting with all of creation in that moment. Something to think about. So that everything that God put into place for this flower to come into being is a way that I can connect with creation. Gives you a different perspective on our relationship with all of creation. So when I walk in the forest, then I have a relationship with the forest. It is my it's my lungs outside my body, in essence, because I breathe in the oxygen that the trees produce, and I breathe out the carbon dioxide, which they process. There is an interbeingness, between me and the forest that's actually essential to my survival. I can see myself in the larger picture. I begin to understand how important it is to take care of the environment, because the environment is us. There's a different kind of a relationship. I see it differently. So I want to be clear that I'm not, because I know some of you may just be going, huh? Because I certainly did the first time I read Thich Nhat Hanh's thing about the flower. But when I took some time to really think about it and be with this idea, it isn't that I'm saying I am the flower. But what I am saying is that God's love that dwells in me is able to recognize the God presence in all of creation, whether that's people or nature. So the kids this morning shared about their Camp Adams experiences. My guess is some of them had mystical experiences, even if they didn't know it. Whenever I hear a shell blown the way that Mitch did at the beginning of the service, I feel this really deep connection with the ancestors and with all the indigenous people who had this ability to live in communion with the land. There wasn't separation, and they knew it. And when I take the time to really enjoy my food. This actually became a thing in Hawaii with the kids. I think some of you were here for that. You take the time to smell it, to look at it, to be grateful for it, to actually take the time to taste it, to not be going so fast you don't enjoy it. It's why for me it's important to really to take that time to have gratitude, to say a prayer, even if it's silently to myself before I eat. Because it allows me to just align with God and with all that went in to that food being prepared, from the seed that was planted to the person that tended it, picked it, processed it, and then prepared it. So, and it's no secret that the secret ingredient in a lot of great recipes is love. And so taking the time to recognize that. I don't know about you, but for me, food just tastes better when it's prepared with love and enjoyed with friends and family. I mean, do you agree? Yeah. So I know today that I'm talking about experiences that some of you may not have had. It may sound neat, may sound a bit surreal. And some of you are maybe realizing for the first time, hey, I've had a lot more mystical experiences than I've realized. And so I don't know, for me, the first time I really felt a mystical experience, because I remember as a little kid, and I think little kids just automatically live in oneness with everything, I just always felt like one with God and one with all of nature. But I do remember, and this will come as no surprise, when I was at a retreat a number of years ago, I was in deep meditation, and I remember having this profound experience of connection and love. And in that moment, I saw the world differently. Colors were brighter, sounds were clearer, smells were sharper. I felt my interconnectedness with everything, with God and everything. So, and I found myself then fascinated with all of life. I realized that I could take time to smell the roses. For a moment, it was my little glimpse of heaven on earth. And so now, when I'm not living from that place of connection and love, then I feel the alienation. It's the opposite side, that part where I'm disconnected from God, where I'm more concerned with myself than the other, where I forget God's command to love God and love others, where I don't treat the environment kindly, where I'm too busy with myself. And I find that hurts. It's painful not to be in connection and love. It produces fear, anxiety, and it creates that us-them, that duality, that us-them mentality. And so I'm very grateful when there are Sufi poets like Rumi that help me remember. Out beyond the ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there is a field. I will meet you there. When the soul lies down in that grass, the world is too full to talk about. Ideas, language, even the phrase, each other, doesn't make sense. Things like that help me remember my interbeingness with all of creation. Let's take a big breath together. I'm giving you a lot this morning. So, how can you more consistently have mystical experiences? Some of you may decide you don't want to, it's too much. But I would encourage you to play with and experiment with your own interconnectedness with God and with creation, and do it at a level that works for you. So what that means is just accepting all that is alive in you, just sitting with all the feelings that you have and noticing. Noticing is, am I connecting with God? Am I connecting with nature? Or am I alienating myself? Have I separated, have I diluted my journey? Could be even a small thing. So am I living in connectedness, or am I diluting and living separate? And just asking yourself that. If you want to have a deeper, an even deeper experience, meditation's a good place to start. It's a really wonderful way of connecting the heart and the mind and the body, and preparing yourself for a mystical experience. And I'm not just talking about, you know, sitting there in silence and going, although for a lot of people that works really well. That's not really a way that works super well for me. And so maybe you listen to the guided meditations that we do weekly on our closed Facebook group, and that'll start up again in September. Or, you know, maybe it's that you just become more conscious when you walk. And so it's like, all right, lifting my foot, God at the beginning, God in the middle, God at the end. This would be a really slow way to walk. God at the beginning, God in the middle, woo, God at the end. But if you were to do that, you would slow yourself really down a lot to be a lot more conscious. It may be the breathe, you know, just breathing in God's love for me, breathing out God's love for others. Breathing in God's love for me. Breathing out God's love for others. It may just be that. Or it may be, you know, maybe you're one of the ones that like to go take a walk in nature. I got to go walk on the beach the last couple days. I was in Seaside with my family. And it's wonderful to walk on the beach and to notice and to listen to the birds and hear the water and feel the sand beneath your feet and just having that experience of being more aware of connecting and seeing the beauty in everything. So find your own way of slowing down and noticing. It's not unusual for mystical experiences to be accompanied by a disciplined practice. You may choose to read about some of the other great mystics as well, like Jesus and Saint Mother Teresa and Martin Luther King Jr. So I have a whole list up there that are both modern day and historical ones. We can learn a lot from them. I'm going to ask right now that the ushers pass out a candle, and I'd like each one of you to take it and hold one of that. And while that's happening, I'm going to share with you a quote by Albert Einstein. He's someone we usually associate with science and with intellect, but here's what he had to say about mysticism. The most beautiful and most profound experience is the sensation of the mystical. It is the sower of all true science. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. That's pretty powerful. He to whom this emotion is a stranger, who can no longer wonder and stand wrapped in awe, is as good as dead. It is this experience of interbeingness, union, communion, and beauty with God and with creation that actually gives us a world that's worth living in. So we're going to take a moment and create some of the circumstances that might, so that we might feel our connection to God. And so as you get your candle, I just invite you to hold it in your hand. Close your eyes. And just notice what thoughts and feelings you're having in this moment. I've shared a lot of information. Some of it may be new, some of it may be old hat. You might be going, oh no, or I don't know about all this. So I'm just going to ask you to kind of play along with me and just kind of be with whatever is there. Just allow the thoughts to be, the feelings to be, whatever they are. Censor nothing. So at some point this week, I invite you to light the candle you're holding and watch the flame as you listen to an inspirational piece of music or you sit in silence. And allow yourself to sit in wonder and stand wrapped in awe in contemplation of your interbeingness with God and all of creation. And now as you sit with your eyes closed or lowered, I'm going to read to you a passage from The Interior Castle, written by St. Teresa of Avila, and this is the translation by Mirabai Starr. And this passage is called The Calling, and it was found in the introduction. And just allow the words to just flow over you. And there is a secret place, a radiant sanctuary, as real as your own kitchen, more real than that, constructed of the purest elements, overflowing with the 10,000 beautiful things, worlds within worlds, forests, rivers, velvet coverlets thrown over feather beds, fountains bubbling beneath a canopy of stars, bountiful forests, universal libraries, a wine cellar offering an intoxication so sweet you will never be sober again, a clarity so complete you will never again forget. This magnificent refuge is inside you. Enter. Shatter the darkness that shrouds the doorway. Step around the poisonous vipers that slither at your feet, attempting to throw you off your course. Be bold. Be humble. Put away the incense and forget the incantations they taught you. Ask no permission from the authorities. Slip away. Close your eyes and follow your breath to the still place that leads to the invisible path that leads you home. Listen, softly. The one you love is calling. Listen. At first, you will only hear traces of his voice. Love letters he drops for you in hiding places, in the sound of your baby laughing, in your boyfriend telling you a dream, in a book about loving kindness, in the sun dipping down below the horizon, and a peacock's tail of purple and orange clouds unfolding behind it, in the nameless sorrow that fills your heart when you wake in the night and remember that the world has gone to war and you are powerless to break up the fight. Let the idle chatter between friends drop down to what matters. Listen. Later, his voice will come closer. A whisper you're almost sure is meant for you, fading in and out of the cacophony of thoughts, clearer in the silent space between them. Listen. His call is flute music, far away, coming closer. Be brave and walk through the country of your own wild heart. Be gentle and know that you know nothing. Be mindful and remember that every moment can be a prayer. Melting butter, scrambling eggs, lifting fork to mouth, praising God. Typing your daughter's first short story, praising God. Losing your temper and your dignity with someone you love, praising God. Balancing ecstasy with clear thinking, self-control with self-abandon. Be still. Listen. Keep walking. What a spectacular kingdom you have entered, befriending the guards and taming the lions at the gate, sliding through a crack in the doorway on your prayer rug, crossing the moat between this world and that, walking on water if you have to, because this is your rightful place. That is your beloved reclining in the innermost chamber waiting for you, offering wine from a bottle with your crest on the label. Explore. Rest if you have to, but don't go to sleep. Head straight for his arms. And when you have dismissed the serpents of vanity and greed, conquered the lizards of self-importance, and lulled the monkey mind to sleep, your steps will be lighter. When you have given up everything to make a friend a cup of tea and tend her broken heart, stood up against the violation of innocent children and their fathers and mothers, made conscious choices to live simply and honor the earth, your steps will be lighter. When you have grown still on purpose, while everything around you is asking for your chaos, you will find the doors between every room of this interior castle thrown open, the path home to your true love unobstructed after all. No one controls access to this perfect place. Give yourself your own unconditional permission to go there. Absolve yourself of missing the mark again and again. Believe the incredible truth that the beloved has chosen for his dwelling place the core of your own being, because that is the single most beautiful place in all of creation. Waste no time. Enter the center of your soul.